Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 28, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter, October 28, 2020. Nature is leading us to a new state. We are obligated to realize what is happening and bring ourselves into alignment with it. Until we do this, nothing will change. We cannot return children to schools and adults to work. We will sit at home until we understand that we have to behave in a new way. Mutual closeness is able to disinfect the place where the virus lives, inside our hatred of each other. We're separated by a mandatory distance beyond which we can't come close to each other. This space is full of complaints and strife. This is a favorable environment for the virus. The coronavirus is a spiritual virus. It reacts to the spirit that dwells between people. It is nourished by hatred that exists between us. It develops and lives inside of it. The more animosity, conflict, and rejection there is between us, the more comfortable the virus feels multiplying in this nutritious environment. There is life after death. The coronavirus pandemic is causing a common complication for all of humanity: fatigue from losing purpose, hope, and reward for effort. A person subconsciously feels that there is nothing to live for and sinks into apathy, depression, and despondency. The whole world seems to be falling asleep. Previously, all of us were playing in competition, building and destroying, bustling constantly like children. Today it is already impossible to continue these games, and people do not understand what to do and for what. There are so many restrictions. Therefore, everyone is seized by apathy and hopelessness. There is no strength to move, no energy, no goal. Can it be that the Creator wants to show that there is no point in living for ourselves as we tried before? In fact, that was self-deception, because no one really lived for himself. It just seemed that way to him. If we start thinking about each other now out of hopelessness, we will support each other in this, and the Creator will also support us. In this way we will see that there is life after the death of our egoism. Another, eternal and perfect, beautiful life that can give us fulfillment, motivation to live, and great energy. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 25, 2020. Writings of Balha Sulam, The Study of the Ten Sefirot. Real opportunity to wake up. Humanity is represented as a tiny speck of sand in the depths of an infinite universe. This entire universe, in fact, has nothing to do with spirituality at all. There is not a single point in it that belongs to the spiritual world, and therefore it does not occupy any place in the real reality. This world where we feel ourselves now, and the vastness of the universe with stars and galaxies, none of this exists at all. This exists only in our imagination, because we are in an unconscious state and see these hallucinations as if in delirium. It is said that when we wake up, we understand that we were like in a dream. In this dream, we were imagining that we live on the planet Earth, surrounded by galaxies and an infinite universe. All this is not real, like a dream caused by electrical processes in the brain, which during sleep is 99% switched off. We can say the same about this life of ours. We are disconnected from true life, as if in a dream. There is nothing real in this life except the opportunity to wake up and rise upward from this perception, from this dream. That is what we need to do. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 19, 2020, Writings of Balha Sulam, Inheritance of the Land. My new article on LinkedIn: humanity teetering between heaven and hell. We're in a new stage in our relationship with the pandemic. We recognize that it'll stay with us for a long time, perhaps forever, and we're frustrated. Everyone's exhausted by the virus, nerves are stretched thin and can snap at any moment. This tension manifests differently in different people, but virtually always negatively, increased violence, depression, intolerance, political and religious extremism, and violent protests. A society is much stronger than an individual. It can provide us with everything we need and much more: security, sustenance, education, entertainment, leisure, fun and games, support when we are weak, and peace of mind about the future. What should we do in return for these benefits? We should do for others what they do for us. Reciprocity is the key to any successful relationship, and the same goes for our relationship with society. If matters continue to evolve in this direction, they can easily lead to civil unrest or even civil war. In a state where people see no future, when they are hopeless, they are capable of anything, including the most extreme violence, just to break out of the dreary apathy that's pulling them down. If we let ourselves go down that path, life will be hell on earth. But there is another way. In such a dire state, under a clear threat to everyone's lives, perhaps we will realize that our worst and only enemy is our own egoism. Not mine, or his, or hers alone, but of all of us, as a collective. We, as a society, are very selfish and idolize selfish individuals who present themselves as happy thanks to their selfishness. When we admire selfish individuals, we are admiring selfishness and, even worse, make everyone else admire it. By definition, a society is the opposite of selfishness. If we want to be individualistic, we should retire to some secluded place, live by ourselves, and whoever survives, survives. But if we want to live as a society, we have to behave as parts of it, namely not individualistically but socially. If we want to live in a society yet behave as though we're by ourselves and only we matter, society will explode. This is what we're doing to ourselves right now. If we agree that humans are social beings, we have to act the part. It is common sense. A society is much stronger than an individual. It can provide us with everything we need and much more: security, sustenance, education, entertainment, leisure, fun and games, support when we are weak, and peace of mind about the future. What should we do in return for these benefits? We should do for others what they do for us. Reciprocity is the key to any successful relationship, and the same goes for our relationship with society. If we realize that our egos have blinded us to this obvious truth, we will make our lives heaven on earth. This is where we can go, if we choose to do it together. The simple truth is that there is nothing more senseless and weakening than thinking of ourselves, and nothing smarter and more emboldening than thinking of each other. Michael Leitman, on Quora, for whom are we responsible? There is a saying that the whole world was created for the person, Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag, Introduction to the Book of Zohar. It means that we are ultimately responsible for the whole world, that is, for all humanity. The question then becomes, why do we lack feeling responsible for the whole world? It is because our nature acts through a self-serving maximum fulfillment for minimum effort filter, which blocks us from feeling such an immense responsibility. Feeling responsibility for the whole world would add an unbearable weight on our shoulders, so in order to spare ourselves from such a constant burden, our self-serving nature seeks a more comfortable worldview. It eliminates the feeling of responsibility for countless other people, and preoccupies us with our own personal needs, desires and concerns. We perceive the world as a projection of our inner qualities. Therefore, if we make no motions to rise above our narrow personal interests in order to benefit others, then we perceived the world accordingly, as a world overflowing with individuals who prioritize their own interests, often at the expense of others and nature. However, the more we can rise above our narrow personal interests and aim to benefit others, then the more we will develop feelings of responsibility and consideration toward them. By applying ourselves to benefit others, we will sense each other as closer and more dear. In other words, The more we develop new altruistic attitudes above our inborn egoistic ones, then the more we will feel responsible for wider and wider circles of human society, until we eventually feel responsible for the entire world. Moreover, today's world appears more interlinked and interdependent than ever before. We live in times when our global interconnectedness becomes increasingly obvious through global economies and technologies. The coronavirus is also a key example of our global interdependence, showing how a minuscule particle that emerged in one city became a global pandemic. Therefore, responsibility and concern only for an individual, a select group or a nation will fall short of securing our lasting happiness, peace and safety. Today, we are in a major transitional era where we will need to start taking responsibility for humanity's well-being, because our benefit or harm depends on the extent of benefit or harm that humanity experiences. New Life 499. The Jews and Terrorism in Europe.
Hello and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. We are experiencing some difficult times. Terrorism is swarming through Europe, shaking up the world, and today we'd like to look at it from the Jewish perspective. We see that Jews feel different. There was always anti-Semitism, but suddenly there's a deterioration that's affecting the Jewish people wherever they are. There's a feeling that things have changed and the future looks dim. We'd like to understand, where is it all headed? Yael, please. Jews in Europe feel truly threatened today. There are many Jews that talk about leaving Europe, especially from France, but not only. The Jewish agency is preparing itself to absorb many Jews, and the feeling is that there is an earthquake going on there, and that the European Jews want to leave. It doesn't necessarily mean that they'll come to Israel, but currently they want to leave a place which feels really insecure and move to other places. Alongside with it, there's a new phenomenon here. If to this day violence against Jews in Europe took place on the background of there being problems, political problems with Israel, Zionism and so on, meaning there was a different reason for the violence, what happens this time is that Jews are attacked directly, without masks, without trying to pin it on the state of Israel, but there's a feeling that Jews are targeted directly, without any excuses. And in parallel, there's also the wave of terror that's swarming through Europe, and we want to understand the place of the Jews in this whole story. And this whole European mess with respect to Islam and the relationships of Jews both with Muslims and the Europeans. Do you think that something has changed in the attitude of Europeans towards Jews in light of this new situation? To the extent to which I know Europe, there is no more anti-Semitic place in the world than Europe. Well, I'm not talking about the Arabian countries where there it's a matter of politics, it's temporary, it's something that's going on, especially in recent times, but Europe was always a place of anti-Semitism, just like it was the source of Christianity, where the anti-Semitic wave started there. And that's how it is to this day. The attitude of Europeans of Europe towards Jews is always negative, despite the tremendous contribution Jews contributed to Europe in terms of science, education, culture. You can write entire books about what they did, and obviously that's how it is. And to this day, They're present in industry, trade, financial system, universities, many other places. But Europeans, it's in their blood, if it's possible to say that. And with all their pluralism and their nice attitude towards all those coming from abroad, and the Arabs and others, Africans, their attitude towards Jews is negative, and especially negative. We have to understand that Rome, and then Spain, and then France are the natural sources of anti-Semitism, where the entire attitude towards Jews was built and was burning for hundreds and hundreds of years throughout our last and lengthy exile. And therefore, the attitude, it won't change. It'll be the same and even worse. And as much as sometimes the terror organizations operate against the local population, suppose against the French, and they say that it's because of the Jews. So, of course, that contributes. Then the terrorists are understood and agreed with, and the Jews are blamed. For example, if it said that Hamas is not a terror organization, then it's already clear the extent to which the French want to show that they're coming closer to the understanding of radical Islam. So what do you have left? Only to push this matter more and more forward. We are people with a European culture, in terms of thinking that it's possible to arrange everything, not by force, but by talk and time, education. But these things don't work. We see that terror works much more successfully. Therefore, were we to think that by explanation, why don't the Arabs prepare explanation leaflets about Jews, that they're the source of evil, suppose in Europe? It works in a very weak manner, long term. And it's known, and they agree to it a priori. And therefore, there's nothing new about it. However, if they use terror, then it's clear to everyone that even though that it's clear that this terror comes from radical Islam, but eventually it will turn the French even more against the Jews. Even more. Even though that it seems there's no connection. The feeling is irrational, it's to the contrary. The feeling is that now that they're experiencing it on their own flesh, the greater the surge in terror in Europe and around the world, the feeling is that people should identify more with the Jews, be closer to them. No, by no means. They won't want to let Jews go, like they didn't want to let Jews leave Russia. And the moment Jews started leaving Russia, it started falling apart. The moment the immigration began. But I remember there was a big struggle inside Russia to allow or not allow the Jews to leave. There was some kind of an agreement with the Americans, and also Brezhnev, his wife was Jewish, so he said, leave him alone, let him go. I was back then a part of it all, and I was waiting every moment, when will it be possible, because sometimes it was like this, sometimes like that. Maybe there's a window of opportunities that you can escape. I got a permit to leave on Thursday evening, and I was very far from home, 700-800 kilometers. I came there, I came back during the night, and Friday I arranged everything, at home, in the working place, everywhere. Saturday, they opened the train station for me. I bribed someone. And I put all my luggage inside the train, and Sunday the train drove to the border, and Monday morning I crossed the border to Vienna. And after me, it closed again for a few months. It was really... Why am I telling you about it? They don't want to let the Jews leave because they see that it's a good force. There's the least problems with them, even though that they steal here and there, but they contribute to the country much more than the practically zero harm they do. The French Prime Minister said that if 100,000 Jews will leave, France will no longer be France. Yeah, we saw it just now that I was on our Congress in Paris. We talked there to someone, a person who has to do with finance and the government. He himself is French. He's not Jewish. And he said, if suppose 1,000 families, Jewish families, leave France, the country falls. Why? Because there are such roles that you can't replace. You can't explain it because there's also something spiritual about it. The Jews, by origin, they are from the so-called vessels of bestowal, which is what? From a system that comes in order to connect, to tie things together, this with that, and so on. And when they're in some country, they tend to build the connections, and the connections they build is their entire business, the development of the country, the villages, they become cities, and a few cities become a country, and so on. Otherwise, Europe would have remained villages and villages. Germany, when did it become one country? Only 200 years ago, even less, that they started gathering all the areas, the separate, its separate areas. And therefore, to them it's clear, to those that are, to those who understand the matter, they don't want to allow the Jews to leave. It's clear to them. And therefore, the meeting between Netanyahu with the French government, with the French president, it was very cold and short, and they didn't want to hear anything. And the moment that they were together in the big synagogue in Paris, and Netanyahu, he wanted to invite the French Jews to come to Israel, all of the representatives of the Jewish government left because they didn't want to listen to it. What are they afraid of? They're afraid that the entire network of industry and trade and science and politics, society, will simply fall apart. And you think that it will fall apart if Jews leave? We saw it happen in the past in countries that expelled the Jews. Spain, then Portugal, then Germany, France, England, Germany again, Poland, Russia. Only in Russia they didn't bring it to an end, but they prepared everything. Stalin, he prepared everything to throw all the Jews into Siberia, into Russia's Far East. for them to be there. Really, were he not to die, then this plan would have been implemented. I don't understand what's the problem. Suppose we go with what you just depicted. 1,000 Jewish influential families with key positions in France leave. Of course there's a problem, but why can't you bridge this gap by qualitative French people? That's what I explained to you about what the Jewish force is. The Jewish force, the force of the Jews, is the force of connection, unity. It's not that we simply develop something someplace and that's it, but by making the connection, tying the ties, like you go out to discover new continents and what are we going to do here and there. It was all done by Jews, because they felt pressure, they felt uncomfortable in Spain, Portugal, with Columbus and everything. The urge was to burst forth. Bursting forth? Yes, because that's the force of the Bina, the force of the Galgalta and the Nine, the force of the Jews, of unity, of connection. It's a small part of humanity, but it's like the cream on top. That's where the force of bestowal is. And therefore it's so qualitative. What can you do? From what I understand, this force creates an infrastructure for modern life and allows growth, if I understand what you're saying. I don't get you. You don't know history, what we had 2,000 years ago, the kind of country we had, and culture, and education, systems inside the country, the way we lived. From that we gave humanity the foundations of culture, of education, of everything. Of course it comes from us, and that's how it remained in our nature. So I want to go back and look at what changed as a result of the current surge in terror. Before the dramatic surge in terror attacks, there was anti-Semitism towards Jews. When I wanted to come out of Russia to Israel, when was that? In 1970 and 1972, there was a government meeting. Whether to start releasing them or not, because the Americans, they put on a lot of pressure. Henry Kissinger came every time and so on. The Americans, they sold different things to the Russians in return for the Russians allowing the Jews to leave. The Americans knew that by that they destroy Russia, and also the Russians knew that by this they're destroying their country. But so I remember there was an interview with the chief Russian science officer, and when he was asked what will happen if we allow the Jews to leave, or he was asked, when can we rid ourselves of Jews in science? He put it simply. He said, if you want to rid yourself of Jews in science, you rid yourself of science altogether. That's it. Meaning, people do understand that. Of course they do. So why this dualism? If there is an understanding that Jews are so beneficial for wherever they are, why on the other hand is there the greatest, most rooted hatred, anti-Semitism? Obviously, but that's not what they're expecting of us. This is something that they're not taking into consideration whatsoever. It's true, we're contributing to this and this and that. Okay, as long as we need them, let them live their life. But actually, the suffering that they feel in life, and they ascribe the suffering to us, that we're the cause of it, is many times greater than all the success in culture, education, theater, music, science, you name it. It doesn't matter. It's like there's something very strange. there's someone among us, and we all hate him. Now he says, okay, friends, I feel bad here. You hate me too much, too many problems, I'm leaving. And they say, no, you're staying here. So decide, what do you want? We want for you to stay here and do what you can for us, but we hate you. We do? What can you do? We hate you, but we can't do without you. So what? No contradiction about it. But these things are conflicting. No, they're not conflicting. I don't have to love him. I use him, and that's it. Because I have no other choice, options. Maybe because of that I hate him even more. Because I'm dependent on him. Right? I remember there was Zelidovich. He was one of the, and I know him, I know his family and so on. He built the nuclear bomb for the Russians. He was a scientist. Jewish. Of course he was Jewish. And what? Did he have anything good in life as a result? How much he suffered? I know it from up close. Okay, let's add into it the surge in Islamic terrorism. Now that it comes and slaps everyone around, it as if brings equality. We're not attacking only the Jews like we did to this day, but also the Europeans themselves. And the immediate response, and this is what's interesting, is that there are waves of solidarity. Everyone holds up signs, we're all Jews, we're all Charlie. The mutual suffering does create a sense of closeness. Is it temporary? Will it go by? Will it intensify? Will the solidarity with Jews grow as Muslim terror intensifies? In the very long term, it will necessitate the Jews to learn what the reason is. They'll understand that there has to be some kind of an irrational reason for it. Irrational meaning above reason, above a rationale. And then they'll start digging into the sources, and maybe they'll come to us and we'll discover that all of this hatred is because we're not meeting our destination of being light unto the nations. We exist in this world only in order to return the entire world to connection and adhesion with the upper force. Meaning what? It means that we have to first of all cause the entire world to connect and bring such a connection that that force of nature called godliness, nature, the upper nature, will dwell inside that connection. Previously you talked about connection. You said that what Jews do is that they connect everything all the time. This with that, but on what level? But we're doing the work. Doing the work in what? In technology, money, culture, education, theater, literature, and that. So what level are you talking about? I'm talking on the inner level, connecting the hearts. And connecting both the hearts of the Jews, first of all, and then of the rest of the nations of the world. That's our work. This is what we have to do. Aside from that, everything else that we do is the very opposite. We're escaping our destiny. And today, Jews in Europe, inside this current situation, you're saying that they actually have a role. What do they have to do today? Where do they have to take it all? Suppose they understand that this is their role. What are they actually supposed to do? Or who can do something there in order to start creating that connection? Instead of them, I would escape here to Israel, even though that Israel isn't ready. There are no places to live, to work. There's no infrastructure. But we'll try. But the solution is in Israel? You're saying that actually the source is, the solution is to come to Israel. I'll put it differently. The most important thing isn't to come to Israel. The most important thing is to come to connection, even there in France, in the U.S. If from this day on they'd work hard at the connection, everything would calm down. When you say connection, what do you mean? I mean that people start connecting between them in a special way, like it says in the wisdom of Kabbalah, to be as one man and one heart, to draw the reforming light by that, that will correct their hearts to be connected, so they'll be in one heart, in love of others, and of course with the help of the light. It's not that we, what do you mean by light? The light is a force hidden in nature. It's a secret, hidden force of nature that we can awaken, derive it, and use it. That's called light, the reforming light. And you said that this is the role of the Jews. The role of the Jews, their ability is to bring that light out for everyone to use it. The nations of the world, they can't touch that light. Why? There's no connection. Only we can. This is according to our sources, which we're carrying with us from ancient Babylon. That's the nature of the special souls. That back then, they all united to be the people of Israel under Abraham, our patriarch, and those that connected called themselves the people of Israel, even though that there was no connection between them. And therefore, it's like the cream on the milk, suppose. And they tie the whole of humanity to the Creator, and they're tied to the whole of humanity. They have to be the transition between the upper force, the force of bestowal and love, and humanity. So, if they do their role, everything calms down. And this is actually what humanity is demanding. They don't understand it, but this is what they're demanding. To be connected to the upper force? Yes. This is what's in the center of the eye of the storm of the religion. War is up ahead? Yes. And this is what the whole world claims, that the Jews are the reason for all the problems. They cause all the problems in the world because you're like a cork blocking the abundance coming from the Creator to the rest of the world. This abundance is standing before you and you're not allowing it to come through because you're not united. The moment the people of Israel unite, the moment they connect, then it flows through them to the rest of the world. The upper force, yeah. In this kind of process, if the Jews start connecting with one another and that blockage opens up, then the whole of humanity, what happens with it? It receives the light. And then what will happen with the religious wars? No religions, no nothing. There are no religious or secular Jews. Everyone unites as one. And all shall know me from small to great, and my home shall be called the home of prayer for all nations. One great big unity connected with upper light, the Creator. And this is what we have to cause. And if we don't do it in time, we experience anti-Semitic hatred and also those things that happened in France this week. And it's not the end of it yet. So we're actually to blame. And as quickly as possible, we have to disseminate this and educate people towards this. So, if to sum everything up, it's not France, Germany against the Muslims, against the terrorism. The force to change this whole situation is not in their hands at all, but it's in the hands of the Jewish people. Yes, and when you look at the nations of the world, how they kill each other, you have to know that it's because of you, for you. You have to know that it's due to you, that you're responsible for it. Is there another side to this coin, or it's all bad? That if something bad happens in the world, as it says, that all calamities come to the world because of Israel. We're responsible. I have to think that I have to correct this very quickly so that calm and tranquility will come to the world. You think that it's possible? Necessary. Now think. What kind of blows we have to experience in the future in order to come to it? By way of suffering? Or we'll come to it through understanding, being targeted in the right direction, and then we'll come to it in a good and nice way. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. I hope that this will happen quickly and in the best possible way. Thank you, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
The end of the office era. Comment. Some journalists have noted that because of the coronavirus, the office culture that obliged us to look good, to drive certain cars to work to be liked, is not operating now. Instead, there is a shift in focus from verbal to written communication. Some conclude these shifts pressure us to see who we really are. My response, of course. There will be one simple communication, yes, no, and so on. Moreover, this will be very clearly accepted by everyone. And in no case will it hurt anyone. There should be a definite clear greeting, but nothing more. Bows, praises, and so on, it will not work. Question, and what do you think about this will pressure people to see who they really are? Answer, a clearer truth about a person is revealed. Remark, can you imagine how much a person thought about what kind of gift to bring to their boss? My comment, yes, now it is over. The era has passed. Even if it partially returns, it will not be like that, of course. Question, what does a person see when he begins to look at himself from the inside? Answer, he begins to see who he is. And of course, he sees something terrible. Question, should he see this terrible thing? Answer, gradually, not immediately. From 0 to 100% until he sees the realization of evil up to complete correction. Question, man cannot skip this stage? Answer, no. What will he base his correction, his spiritual elevation, on? Question, is the realization of evil joyful or scary for a person? Answer, I think it is joyful. One can gloat, how much dirt, rubbish I have dug up in myself today. As if you dig the earth with a shovel like this, dig, dig, turn yourself over, break into lumps in order to plant new young shoots. This is not the self-scrutiny accepted by us, previously, how bad I am. This is a kind of introspection where you change the principle of receiving to the principle of bestowal and want everyone to benefit from it. You turn the layers of dirt inside yourself from those below to those above. And then you can plant new life. The fact that we have left offices, of course, will bring huge changes in everything. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, July 27, 2020. Humor, an emotion of a developed person. Question, emotions are a subconscious reaction to a situation such as fear, irritation, anger, or laughter. They appear quickly and can disappear just as quickly. Feelings can also arise slowly, live for a long time, and give completely different sensations. Feelings can be developed. For example, feelings of love, friendship, gratitude, and loyalty. It is interesting that a quality such as humor is characteristic only for people, animals do not have it. Where does it come from and how can it be used for advancement and self-identification? Answer, in each of us, there are two completely opposite entities, me and something opposite to me. This makes it possible to feel, understand, and even enjoy things that are in conflict with each other. Thus, a sense of humor appears in a person from his reverse side. Internal contradiction expands the understanding of the world and that is why it is inherent in developed people. Question, do you think that one can develop a sense of humor? Answer, maybe it can be developed a little, but people with some mental disorders do not have it. Question, so humor is given to people as a gift and it is almost impossible to develop it? Answer, yes. This is based on the fact that man was created to perceive his own kind in the opposite way and put up with it. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, August 7, 2020. Study every day. Remark, all training systems and practices, in principle, are designed to enhance the perception of information. A person who can remember more information and then use it is considered smart. Such people are very advanced and make a lot of money. My comment, earning money, getting ahead in our world, doesn't mean anything. A person who has absorbed everything that was given to him and forgotten it is considered to be smart. What does forget it mean? Ask me something. I don't seem to know anything, I don't remember anything. But as soon as we start to solve some problem, you will see that I really knew something, learned something. I've been studying all my life. Remark, in order not to forget the information, it is useful to repeat the material from the previous day. You, too, always advise us to reread the article covered in the lesson during the day. My comment, yes. But this is short-term memorization. Question, you also advise to study a little, but every day. Why? Answer, because the brain constantly absorbs a small amount of information. We must change the person. And if you don't feed him like a small child every day, then he does not change. If he comes to the courses every few days, then between visits you do not influence him, and he gets completely different impressions of our world. Therefore, daily activities are simply a must. It is said about this, if you miss one day, you lose 2 days on it. Our job is to change the inner person. From CapTV's Management Skills, June 24, 2020. Envy is a means of advancement. Question. Envy is the desire to have what another has. The famous philosopher Spinoza defined envy as displeasure at the sight of someone else's happiness. What is the reason for envy in a person? Where does this feeling come from? Answer, envy is born in each individual from his developed egoism. The achievements of another person, which he himself has not yet reached, awaken a feeling of envy in him. Question. Envy is usually based on comparison. Why do we compare ourselves to others? Answer, because we are governed by the ego, which shows that there is still egoism nearby that is in a better state than ours. The comparison between these two states gives rise to the feeling of envy. At the same time, envy is an element of development. If, looking at another, it seems to me that everything is better with him, then I also strive for this and thus, develop. Question. Should we cultivate a feeling of envy? Answer. Absolutely. Without this, we will not move forward. Even for a child, we instinctively set another as an example, look how he does this. After all, we want his development. Question. Envy can be both negative and positive. Which one propels a person forward? Answer. Both must develop in a person, and as much as possible. But, at the same time, he must understand when it is positive and useful, and when it's not. From CapTV's Communication Skills, August 7, 2020. When will the Holy Land be ours? Question. In the Torah in Bereshit, it is written that Abraham asked the Creator, how will I know that I will inherit it? And the Creator answered him, you shall surely know that your seed will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and they will enslave them and oppress them, for 400 years. And also the nation that they will serve will I judge, and afterwards they will go forth with great possessions. Can we rely on the primary sources written thousands of years ago to say today that this is our land? Answer, the laws of nature are absolute and they must be applied. Therefore, what was said 3 to 4 thousand years ago is coming true today. Remark, in the Midrash, it is written that Israel will not return to their land until they are all in one bundle. But we are back. Answer, no. Our physical return does not mean anything. Absolutely nothing. This is not the return that should be. Therefore, Kabbalists believe that there is actually no return yet. We have arrived here, we are on this land, but it is not sacred and not ours. Our land will be a desire in which we can unite because land eretz from the word ratzon desire. And these are not stones under your feet but hearts that will unite together. From CapTV's systematic analysis of the development of the people of Israel. November 25, 2019.